Welcome back to The Independent with Scott Atlas. Rejoining our conversation with Steve Hilton, my guest today, who is an author, news commentator, entrepreneur, and expert in both the UK and the United States politics. Stay tuned. I want to mention the other big issue before we get off of this and start talking about California specifically. And that is the other issue, of course, that was the key issue for Donald Trump, in addition to the economic stuff going on and the this massive cultural stuff, was the issue of immigration. Mm-hmm. And immigration, from my point of view, because I travel quite a bit internationally, I'm very concerned, as I'm sure you are, about what's happening in Western Europe, in the mm-hmm. UK particularly. And when will the backlash come, or is it already coming there? Because what I see is you sort of, yes, it's open to legal immigration. That's fine. We like to have different cultures together. But at some point, as President Trump has said many times, if you don't have control of your border, you really have no country. What's mm-hmm. happening to the British, the whole culture of the UK? I mean, it's very striking to me that the whole population has really changed, and I don't know what to make of that.
Well, there's a few things I'd say. That? I mean, you know, first of all, I should point out, in any discussion about immigration, I'm very pro-immigration. I'm an immigrant twice over. You know, my parents, as I am. Right. My parents moved from, as we were discussing, from communist Hungary to the UK. And then I moved with my family from the UK to here, to America and to California. Now I'm an American. You know, and as I say, yes, it took a long time to go through the process, and it's annoying and bureaucratic, and I hate bureaucracy, but you know, we did it. It's possible. I think that the first thing I'd say is this phrase that actually I believe David Cameron, well, I certainly remember him using it. He may have got it from someone else, but I think it's a very wise observation, which is that generally speaking, you know, people are good and decent and welcoming, and that's true in the UK and it's true in America. And we have a proud tradition of immigration enriching our societies. That's all true. But this is the phrase he used to use all the time, which is public consent for immigration depends on government control of immigration. And he would make the argument, if you like, in a positive sense, which is like, if we want to protect that welcoming spirit towards immigrants, we need to control immigration. And the minute that you let go of it and it's a free-for-all and people think that they're being taken advantage of and their country's just being exploited, you lose that public consent. And it actually feeds the kind of attitudes, whether that's whatever liberal term you want to use, xenophobia or, you know, nationalism or whatever term you want to use, right? It's fed by a lack of control of immigration. So it's totally reasonable. And people use the analogy of a house, which I think really it makes sense, which is you don't just sort of literally let anyone just wander into your house and live there, but you're very welcoming of guests, but you've got to do it in an orderly way. And exactly. What's really interesting, I think, if you look at Europe, Germany's really been at the heart of it in many ways, because you know, twice now they've really kind of done this the wrong way. First of all, you had a really big group of, I think it was really in the 70s that it started, Turkish immigrants into Germany. I studied German at school, and I remember, you know, we were learning as part of when you learn the language, you also learn about history and culture. And the whole phenomenon of it was called the Gastarbeiter, the guest workers. And that's what it was. They were importing workers from Turkey, particularly Turkey. They had some arrangement, I don't know the deal. And that was back in the 70s. And then, of course, Angela Merkel, in response to what was going on in the Middle East, welcomed millions of people from the Middle East in a completely open way, but in a very selfish way, because, of course, it's the European Union. Germany's part of the European Union. And it's open borders within the European Union. That's the whole point. Free movement. Movement of people. So she can, it's all very well for Angela Merkel to say, yeah, come to Germany. They're going to stay in Germany. They can go wherever they want. Guess where they want to go? To the richest place with the most opportunities. They're not going to, some impoverished part of the European Union. They're going to the UK. And so it's a problem for everyone else. It's totally selfish. And I remember, you know, just, you know, we have family members who, you know, one of whom married someone in Germany, and they were very pro the, it's a really interesting turnaround when there's, when this, the people were moving from the Middle East, and Angela Merkel said come, and they were welcoming. They even, they literally put people up in their house, right? They were really in supportive of this. The children went to the station, the train station, with gift baskets. You know, there was a whole kind of feeling of, we're going to show that we're a welcoming nation. A year on, you talk to them, totally different. Like, this is a nightmare. They're not learning German. They're not prepared to work. They want everything. They're not integrating into our culture, not assimilating, and so on. So you just, the scale of this kind of thing is just not reasonable. And I always say, with respect to America, of course we welcome immigrants, but you have to sign up to what America stands for. You can't come to America and start arguing against the foundational values and principles of America. If you don't like it, go somewhere else. So you've got to become an American, not just literally and legally, but in the full sense of supporting and being appreciative of what America stands for.
Right. And, you know, I too am from a family of immigrants. My grandparents were not born here. And that was an era of massive immigration for people who wanted to be American.
Yes.
And, you know, this is sort of part of the assimilation. We like multicultural America. That's what makes it interesting, of course. But on the other hand, you shouldn't come here if you don't want to be American.
Yes.
I mean, that seems so such common sense. You shouldn't have to say it. But we'll see how it evolves. I mean, I think that the public woke up. And I think you're right. Americans are very welcoming. To me, there's no question about that. I think that what happened was, yes, there's a backlash now, and that was inspired by really flawed policy and having it shoved down the people's throat.
But I just want to say something about the UK, again, sign of hope, which is, I don't know if you followed this or our audience will have, there's a really interesting person has just been elected. Obviously, the Conservative Party had a massive defeat in the election just now, the biggest in their history. But they've just elected a new leader who's really interesting. She is a black woman, Kemi Badenoch, I think we're supposed to say. Her parents are, I can't remember which way around, one is Nigerian, one is Scottish. And she's amazing, actually, super interesting. And one of the things that was, one of the things that's been really a key, you know, component of her political rise, and she was, in fact, in the previous Conservative government, I believe she was the Equalities Minister. She's done a couple of really good things. She's challenged all this, you know, the multiculturalist sort of attitude that you can come here and just sign up to whatever beliefs you want to the UK. And by the way, she also was very strong on the kids trans issue. She commissioned the CAS report, which actually from the National Health Service, which was incredibly strong and clear on gender-affirming care, as it's called, and all of that. But let's not go down that hole. I want to talk about the cultural thing. And she said, look, sorry, if you come to the UK, you've got to sign up to what we believe. And she wrote a very, you know, clear editorial op-ed on this. And I remember seeing the clip that went round. She was on the BBC kind of Sunday show equivalent of Meet the Press or whatever, just during the leadership election. And it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. You had this snooty white woman journalist, you know, the host, challenging a black woman on what she'd been saying about other cultures. What Kemi Badenoch, the new leader, said was that no, we need to be clear that not all cultures are equal or equally good, and we've got to be clear about saying that. So you have this white woman saying, you know, kind of, how dare you, and then Kemi Badenoch saying, sorry, when I go round and I'm campaigning and I knock on a door and a woman answers the door, and is, you know, in a Muslim community wearing, you know, the hijab or whatever it may be, and she says, and Kemi says, how are you planning to vote in the election, can I talk to you about our policies, whatever, and the woman says, sorry, you have to talk to my husband about that. No, that's not okay. That is not the UK. This woman argued back. And then Kemi Badenoch said again, sorry, but a culture that believes in stoning gay people is not on the same level as our culture here in Britain. That is not a controversial thing to say. But it's
amazing. It shouldn't be.
But it is controversial.
I know it is.
But what's amazing and encouraging is that, having said all that very strongly and clearly, she's now the leader of the party. And so there people are fighting back.
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, my feeling is, yes, it's not a direct result of the U.S. election, but I'm sure you too. I received many, many messages, emails, phone calls from all over the world, thrilled that Donald Trump was elected. And I'm talking about places not just in the UK, in Western Europe, Switzerland, Brazil, even as far as Vietnam and Indonesia. People are telling me thrilled that Donald Trump was elected. I think that sort of puts a little perspective on it. I want to spend a few minutes on California. Mm-hmm. You know, there's rumors out there that you might be seeking office at some point in your life here. You're an enthusiastic Californian now, and your brand of positive populism, I think you even coined that phrase, is a welcome change. And, you know, we saw in the Trump Harris election, I mean, Trump got almost 40% of California and one flipped, I think, more than 10 counties in California. I think there's a sea change going on in California. So I sort of wanted to get your take on, first of all, what you think are the big issues in California to fix or to address, and how optimistic are you that these things will happen?
Well, you're right that I'm getting more and more engaged. I mean, you know, going back, I mean, I've done various things in my career. I've started and run businesses, including restaurants, which is not the best business to be in, but you learn a lot from it. And a tech company here, and I've taught at Stanford and I have this media platform. But I did spend a lot of my career working on policy, both, you know, sort of and campaigns and getting elected, and then working in 10 Downing Street as an advisor. And so it is true that over the last few years, as things are getting, you know, particularly prompted by the pandemic and then madness in California with the lockdowns, the most extreme and cruel and counterproductive in the entire country, really prompted by that, but just generally looking at what's going on in California, getting more and more to the point where I think I don't just want to be talking about it and complaining about it. I'd like to try and do something about it. So I have...
to say, you have a very inspirational voice on these things. So I want you to keep talking about it no matter what you decide.
That's the plan. I mean, for about a year and a half ago, I started an organization called Golden Together, which is a policy-focused organization. So we've been doing policy reports. Because really, I'm a policy guy at heart. So we've been looking at some of the major issues. And we took a little bit of a pause for the election. Now we're going to be back on stream with that in the new year. So, and I've been traveling the state, particularly in the last few months, trying to help those Republicans running for office, but the congressional seats in the state legislature, campaigning for Prop 36 on crime. So I've been very engaged in it, and I'm really looking at getting more engaged. No announcements yet, but I'm seriously considering all of that. I think the point is that people really are sick of the direction that we're going. I mean, that's overwhelmingly clear from the opinion polls, but actually you saw a real vote that way in this election. And on top of the specific moves in terms of candidates from Democrat to Republican, and that shift was the biggest almost in the entire country. Actually, on issues, you saw the Republicans win the election in California. The California voted Republican, but didn't realize it. And not just on the one that a lot of people are talking about, Prop 36, on crime and drugs, but actually on a bunch of other issues as well, on tax increases, Proposition 5, which would have made it much easier for state and local governments to raise taxes. That was defeated. On the minimum wage, raising the minimum wage, that was defeated. Rent control was defeated. So right across the board, people voted for Republican positions. Now
given we're in this state where referendum is really on the ballot all the time, I think there is a very good assessment of the electorate here compared to some other states. We're very active as a state, putting on the issue, and then it's voted on. Separate from the office holder. So I think your point is well taken.
And there's another one. It's a small story in a way, but I think it's illustrative of the opportunity. So just take one city I know very well, Huntington Beach in Orange County, Surf City, USA, iconic city. So 4 years ago, the city council in Huntington Beach was 6-1 Democrat. A friend of mine, Tony Strickland, who became the mayor 2 years ago, organized some strong candidates, and they ran a really strong campaign. They took control of the council. So it went 4-3. Republican. They immediately started implementing what you would just call common sense policies on crime, on homelessness, on a bunch of local issues. And guess what happened just now in the elections? A clean sweep, 7-0 Republican. So in the space of 4 years, it's gone 6-1 Democrat, 7-0 Republican. And it shows what you can do if you fight and if you have energy. And then once you have the opportunity to make change happen, if you actually deliver common sense Republican outcomes, people reward you for it. And I think that is a really encouraging sign. I think that people are, you know, you'd see Gavin Newsom going around, you know, 6 years into his governorship, just now, you know, talking about how we're going to, you know, sort out our economy and get jobs, good paying jobs as a slogan. We've had, you know, California is failing on every front. It is amazing when you actually look through the data.
Under his leadership.
And it's not an exaggeration to say we're the worst run state in America. I mean, the results of this far left experiment that you've had, this, you know, one party rule from the Democrats for nearly two decades now, we have, I mean, right now, I think we're number two. For much of this year, we had the highest unemployment rate in the whole country. We have the highest rate of poverty. When I say that, people say, well, it's a big state. You have more poverty. It's not just the number of people living in poverty, the highest rate of poverty. We have the highest housing costs, the lowest home ownership, the highest gas bills, highest electricity bills, highest water. You know, the worst business climate, 10 years in a row, as voted on by chief executives. You know, on and on. It's a total failure on every front. And so you can see
in a
the
state
results.
That is the gem of the country. I think everybody adores California without looking at the policies and the direction of things. I mean,
well,
that's shocking.
Like, if you look at, exactly, and I say, I love California. There's nowhere better than California. So why are so many people leaving? I mean, hundreds of thousands of people. Why would anyone leave this amazing place? Because it's impossible to live here. If you're a working class family, a middle class family, I mean, so many people I meet, that it's heartbreaking. You know, their kids, their grandkids, if they want just the basics of a normal life, right? A good job where you keep enough of your money to raise your family in a home of your own in a safe neighborhood with a good school so your kids have a better life than you. For most people, that's out of reach in California. They have to, that's why they're moving to Texas or Tennessee or Florida or Nevada or wherever. Because, and you know, this is the data, right? We lost representation in the Congress because our population was falling for the first time in our state's history. So why are people leaving?
You know, And you know, to have a state where they're trying, in my view, there's a lot of the problem is there's social engineering through the power of government going on. And I just think that's antithetical to America. I don't think anybody wants that kind of imposition of government power into their personal lives. Mm-hmm. Minor things, you know, this will be the state that has the electric vehicle mandate bar, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds mm-hmm. of things will happen here first. Mm-hmm. I view that as true. And that's sort of, that's such a destructive pathway to embark on.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned something, I want to ask you about this because people ask me, what is a populist all the time?
Mm-hmm.
And I you think about what has happened in politics, Democrat, Republican, and, you know, I personally think President Trump is not an ideologue at all. He's probably the most moderate Republican that they've had in decades, but the Democrats don't realize that. And I sort of think now the difference now is we want policies that are what you said, common sense. It's common sense versus some idealistic or naive sort of way to do things. And I think that's the division. The Republicans have become the party of common sense. I think President Trump stated this many, many times, but I think it's true. It's not ideology. It's simply common sense. And that's why he has formed such a coalition.
100%. I mean, that is the central difference now, that you've got the Democrat, and California really represents that. It's completely consumed by and captured by abstract ideology. And so you have a whole set of policies that make no sense. Funnily enough, you mentioned EVs. I'm increasingly of the view that the defining issue for the future in California, I mean, people might be watching or listening around the world or across the country and say, well, you know, it's the very high profile, very visible issues of crime and homelessness. And that's true. But honestly, even the Democrats are getting the message on that. I mean, things are changing on those two issues. You see just in this election, you know, the mayor of San Francisco kicked out, the mayor of Oakland, which is a total basket case, kicked out, the district attorney for Alameda County, where Oakland is, kicked out in a recall, George Gascon in Los Angeles, kicked
LA,
out, you
right.
know, so in LA. So you've got, I think actually, you're going to see some real progress on crime and homelessness, that people, even in Berkeley, I was just reading, you know, that the city council is starting to clear homeless encampments in a pretty aggressive way.
Yeah.
But the real, but the, I think the thing that is inescapable, the more I look at it, when you look at these basic issues of, you know, what it's just that like to live a life and try and build a life in California for regular working class people, middle class people, it's this climate ideology that's driving a lot of the problems in California. Because why is it that we have the highest housing costs in the country? A huge component of it is they won't let you build anywhere. You've got these environmental regulations, the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, which is abused by unions to block housing. They got this ideology against single family homes. So you can't, there's counties in Southern California that would love to build housing cheaply and deliver the California dream, but they're being blocked by the California Air Resources Board, CARB, which is just this unaccountable bureaucracy that just says, no, you, the only you, all you can do is build apartments. And, you know, it's just the environmental stuff. The, you, of course, the EV mandates, energy
right.
costs are so high because of the climate policy. And it doesn't even make sense on its own terms. I mean, my favorite example is the oil and gas industry, where we have a very strong oil and gas industry in California, centered in Kern County, where Bakersfield is. And, you know, not that long ago, we produced nearly, you know, 20 years or so ago, we produced nearly all the oil and gas we use in California was domestically produced. And there's no pipeline that brings oil into California from other parts of America. So either we produce it here or we have to ship it in. So guess what's been happening? They've been shutting down the industry here and not using any less. Well, what are we doing? Shipping it in. So instead of actually bringing it from, you know, Kern County, it goes 700 miles or so to refineries in LA, we're now bringing it halfway across the world in super tankers,
right.
which are the most polluting form of transportation on the planet, just to sort of somehow satisfy their abstract ideology and pat themselves on the back that they're doing something about climate change. But they're not. They're actually increasing emissions. And in the process, punishing communities in California, raising the cost of energy, which in turn raises the cost of everything else. I mean, it's just a complete joke. And so
right.
once we take this argument to them in an aggressive manner, I think this whole house of cards is going to collapse.
Yeah, I'm optimistic too. I think people woke up. There is a common sense that is refreshing to hear when you travel around the country. You travel quite a bit, particularly around California. Regular people have common sense. It's
yes.
simply the political leadership that lacks it. And I think we need people who are both optimistic but have common sense to,
yes.
to get into positions of leadership and power. When can we look forward to knowing what you're doing, Steve?
Well, I think I'd say, you know, I'm afraid to give you a bit of a politician's answer and say, you know, in the months ahead, you know, so I'm looking at it, you know, there's some big questions still out there. Of course, Kamala Harris is supposed to be looking at running in California, which is probably an incentive to do it, actually, because that would be it would be fun to beat her again.
Yes, it would be. Well, we're all looking forward to your more involved presence, even and including on your show, Steve. It's a pleasure talking to you. And as always, we will be very positive and fix things here. There's,
fantastic.
There's a lot at stake. We both have kids. We need to get this country back.
Exactly.
And particularly California is going to lead the way. So thanks.
Brilliant.
Thanks for joining.
Thank you very much, Scott. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Independent with Scott Atlas. If you want to find out more about today's guest, Steve Hilton, watch his expert commentary on his podcast, The Steve Hilton Show, on Twitter, at Steve Hilton X, on Fox News. And don't forget, subscribe to this show on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Google, anywhere else you're listening to podcasts right now. And I'll see you next time.